But I think that one of the biggest mental mistakes I'd say most golfers make is just getting too mad over bad shots, and then they let that one bad shot turn into a bad hole or bad stretch of holes. The role of the mental game is to figure out how we can get our peak performance. And by that, we mean, you know, if we're stressed out, if we're frantic, we're angry, we're anxious, we're all these negative emotions, we have high brain waves. And we have high brain waves, we are not going to be able to get in the zone. We're not going to be able to play our best golf. First thing I talk about with my clients is like, hey, where are we at right now? Where do we want to get to? And I think that's always key. Like, what does that look like? Like, how are you conducting yourself? Like, how do you warm up? How do you carry yourself after a bad shot? What do you do in between shots when you're not giving your mind a lot of clarity? And I think that's the biggest thing that most golfers don't do before the shot is really like focus on what we want. Like, where do we want the ball to go?
There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it, rip it.
All right, we've got Mr. Wicked Smart Golf, Michael, joining the Member Guest Podcast tonight. A topic that is very near and dear to both Andy and I's heart, which is the mental game of golf. And you, sir, have made a name for yourself over the past, gosh, I don't know, kind of... Maybe one, introduce yourself, and then two, kind of talk about how things have blown up for you recently. It seems like you've really kind of taken off, so you must be doing something right.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thanks again for having me on the show, guys. It's always fun to talk golf and hang out with fellow golf podcasters. So, yeah, I'm just a golf addict. Like I said, this is like the one time I've taken a few days off my own golf game, but pretty much for the last 6-7 years, golf has been really everything for me. And I quit my job actually in 2017 to go all in on golf and entrepreneurship. So it's really been a wild ride. But the last few years is really when I started to get Wicked Smart Golf, my brand started, where I published a book, launched a podcast, and got into the mental golf coaching side of things. And so the last few years has just been a ton of writing about golf. As my kind of beginning part of my entrepreneurial journey, I was a freelance writer in a lot of other topics. I did a lot of personal development, personal finance. I did a lot of entrepreneur stuff. So I was a freelance writer, and I always had some golf clients as well. So I kind of put that on my portfolio and got my start writing about golf. And now looking back over the past about 6-7 years, I've published over 3 million words of golf content, 2 books, and just more Instagram captions than I can even think about. So I've done a lot of golf writing, so, and just love the game.
You're a sicko like us, is basically what you're saying.
Yeah, I wanted to be like, how can I get this to make me money? Because I just love this game so much. So I'll just never forget when I quit my corporate job, my corporate career. I'd been there 6 years and, you know, had the golden handcuffs and could have kept going and was definitely in a good financial position. And I remember I had started a personal finance blog for millennials because I felt like college didn't teach us anything. And I'd made like $200 from this blog. Like, it had made absolutely nothing. And I just remember talking or kind of telling my boss, like, hey, I'm quitting. Like, they had known I had this blog. They had known I had like one viral blog post. And I mean, I was a terrible writer. This is 2017. And I'll just never forget, you know, I'm making, you know, easy 100+K and I barely worked. I mean, it was a joke job. And I just never forget. I'd made like $200 from my blog, and I was like, "Yeah, I'm quitting." And I've saved up a lot, and I'm gonna go all in on entrepreneurship and golf. And you know, hopefully, we'll either start a business that inspires others, or pursue professional golf, or maybe we'll get both. And kind of funny that maybe the professional golf didn't work out, but I've played in 300+ days of tournaments and started a business that has helped thousands and thousands of golfers. So it's kind of funny how it all works out, and sometimes just putting your intentions out there into the universe and hopefully figuring it out. So it's been a wild ride, but yeah, I love golf. I love helping others. I started playing 25+ years ago. And so that's why I have 270+ episodes on my own show, because I just can't talk about this game enough.
Damn, dude. Yeah, you're putting us to shame. And I will say, aside from just like the golf podcast stuff, really cool. Like, you know, Andy and I have kind of, you know, a little bit jokingly talked about, hey, man, it'd be sweet to do this full time one day, like, because we're in the same boat as you. Like,
we love it. And for right now, we're just doing it, not necessarily monetarily, but to have conversations like this where we just learn more about not only ourselves and our game, but just meet people in the industry, meet people like yourself that clearly know a lot more about some of this stuff than we do. So as somebody that took your mental model or test that has actually done like sessions with you, like at what point did you, you know, obviously you love the game, but like how did you get to the specifically the mental side of it? And I know you're a decade guy too, but like actual mental brain model type stuff with golf. One, how did you get into it? And then two, how do you decide to start doing what you're doing?
Yeah, so I'd say, so I played in high school very unsuccessfully. So my first tournament freshman year, 124. First tournament senior year, 74. So nice little 50-shot improvement there. And then I played a couple years very unsuccessfully in college. People are like, oh, did you play in college? I'm like, yeah, like last place in the tournament. And I was an absolute head case. Like, I mean, I think back to college golf. I don't know how I never got kicked out of a tournament. I mean, I was 19, you know, 18, 19, zero emotional awareness, you know, zero mental game knowledge. I mean, I was a psycho out there. I remember my first shot of my college career, I almost shanked it out of bounds. I just like tomahawked his club. I remember getting it. I remember might have used the Lord's name in vain, might have been paired with a college player who was at a very religious school. So I got into a little bit of trouble with some verbal and physical outbursts. So I always bring that up just to give people some like background. Like, yeah, I wasn't always this guy that like, you know, knows a thing or two about the mental game. Now, like it came from wanting to figure out like, how is this affecting my game? How is this making me worse? Because I always loved the game. And I improved 50 shots in high school because I worked my ass off. I didn't really do anything in high school. All I did was get better at golf. There was nothing to do in a town I grew up in Oregon. So it was just golf, golf, golf. And that was great. I worked at the golf course. I played golf. And so I always loved it. But again, I always knew the mental games kind of hold me back. After a few years of college golf, there was zero. I really realized like, wow, I have zero chance of going anywhere with this. So I quit golf for like 6-7 years. All I do is play recreationally, you know, go out with friends, coworkers, drinking, like just fun golf. And I got back into it in 2016 because I was really searching for the next stage of my life and wanted to find something outside of, you know, the corporate world. I just felt like there was more to it. And I think I was following Gary Vee at the time a lot and just, you know, follow your passions, follow your passions. So I just like went all in on my passions. And one of those was golf. And my girlfriend was like, you know, you should play golf more. You're so good at it. You always loved it. Like, get back into it. So I started playing and practicing a lot. And when you go from, you know, having a mental game at 20 years old as a 20-year-old male, which is like zero, to, you know, late 20s and kind of just having a little bit more stability in my life and understanding the role of the mind a little bit more. I, you know, kind of got into some personal development stuff. And I was like, wow, there's a really big part of this. And I started reading all the Dr. Bob Rotella books and I really was just fascinated with it. And when I quit my job, then I really went all in on golf. I wanted to see, you know, how much or how far I could go. I never wanted to be 70, 80 with regrets, being like, damn, I might have been able to make it. Like, you know, I wanted to try it. And I realized very quickly that the mental game was so important. And so when I quit, I started working with mental coaches. I read, there's probably 50 plus mental golf books behind me. I worked with sports psychologists, hypnotherapists, you know, just tried to do everything I could to learn more about the mind, both on and off the golf course. And so when I started my podcast, that was really, or the whole brand of Wicked Smart Golf, the whole brand was really better golf without swing changes. And the mental game is definitely a big part of it. It's not everything, but it is a really big part of it. And so that's where I just, you know, kind of started sharing my own experiences on the show. And then I interviewed a great coach and the creator of Mental Golf Type, who is John Weir. And once I interviewed him, I was like, wow, this is, you know, amazing. And I had went through his system and I started seeing results in my game. And it's a personality-based mental golf system. So I started working with the Mental Golf Type system, and John was just a great guest and we became friends. And he asked me if I wanted to get certified as a coach. And I said, absolutely. And so that was at the end of 2022. And then I started having people reach out that listened to the podcast and wanted help, and really just been helping golfers ever since then. And, you know, trying to share my own experience and obviously teaching the Mental Golf Type system that we did, Jordan, and just trying to share as much knowledge as I can to help others master their mind a little bit, because that's one of the biggest things that people reach out to me for is, you know, blow up holes, mental game, meltdown, stuff like that.
Yeah. Dude, so I have like so many questions for you. I don't even know like where to start.
Let's go.
All right. So Jordan, do you mind if I jump in for a minute?
Before Andy jumps in, I just want to state that so as somebody that did this, I think the biggest realization that I had was that with the mental side of the game, there is the what I'll just call like the decade stuff, right? Which is course management, understanding your game, understanding golf, understanding shots to play. There's that side, right? The mental stuff that we're about to talk about is literally like your personality traits, how your brain works, how you should be thinking about a shot. Because when you ask somebody else what they're seeing or envisioning, it might not be how your brain learns and works, right? And so I'll let Andy now go into this, but I do think it's important to have that realization and understand, like, we are talking about specifically how each individual's brain and their personalities work and how we can apply that to the golf game. So with that, Andy, the floor is yours.
Yeah, so I think is like amazing because there isn't a whole lot out there in this area, right? There's a lot of stuff around like course management. We've talked to a lot of people around technology, golf swing mechanics, right? Like there's a world of information out there. There's probably less so on kind of the mental game. And Michael, to give you like 1 minute of context, I hit like a breaking point, I would say maybe frustration around golf, like towards the end of last year, and really like committed this year, to like a couple of like really simple things. One of the things I committed to was, not having any swing thoughts, or technical swing thoughts. Let me say that, I'm someone who had to, like, I was so obsessive compulsive about having a swing thought. It was like insane. If I didn't, I would have to go to the range like before I played and like find something to think about. And I realized like a lot of that is because I have a very like busy brain, you know, like kind of the 10,000 talking monkeys persona. And actually that like technical framework, what I told Jordan is like, I'm pretty sure it raised the floor of my golf game. In other words, like I had something to lean on, that like kind of kept really bad out of my golf game for the most part. But what I found is like it put an artificial ceiling on my golf game just as much as it raised the floor, because my natural like ability could never really take over, and my natural like athleticism and instincts could never really take over. And so so this is just all like me like connecting dots and trying to figure things out for myself with zero help, right? So I go into this year and I'm like, no technical swing thoughts. And dude, it was a shit show for like 2 months, right? Like I was lost. Like I almost cried on the golf course like 3 times. I'm not kidding.
I've been there.
Like, and I'm listening to Bob Rotella books every night on audiobooks, like in the car on the way to and from. Like I'm just trying like to find it, right? And I don't know like what happened, but I had some sort of a breakthrough like a couple of weeks ago in a tournament, where I just found that like for the first time in a really long time, I could stand over the golf ball and I could just think about the target and make a swing. And it's been my model ever since. There was a lot of things in between, but my question for you, this is all getting to a question, which is like, how much of the mental game is like a process of osmosis versus like, here's this thing that I can take and go take out on the golf course today? Because that was the challenge for me, right? Like a swing thought I could take out of the golf course tomorrow and it could make me not hit it 4 miles right. I found like and I work on my golf swing all the time and I practice it. I found that like the missing gap, the missing link for me was like, I never practiced my mental game. It never was something I like worked on. And I've been working on it for 2 months and I'm starting to see results and I'm going like, holy shit, this is the most neglected area of like my game and I'm getting all this ROI on it, but it did not come overnight. And that was the frustration for me for so long, was like, dude, I read Bob Rotella's book. Like why? why can't I putt amazing? Like, what the fuck? Like, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, right? So I'm just really curious, like, and I know this is about a long monotrop, and I want to set some context. I'm really curious on your approach with your clients and whether you see that this is a process over time and how long the process takes, and just kind of what you've observed in your own game and what you've observed kind of working with people.
Yeah, I mean, really good questions. And I think it's like one, I would say swing thoughts aren't the end of the world. It's having, you know, one or two that are go-to. But I think one, we got to like even step back and be like, what's the goal of the mental game? Because the mental game is so just this like vague like topic. No, it's like, oh, does that just mean I breathe? Does that mean I think positive? Does that mean I don't talk shit to myself? Like, what does it really mean? And so, you know, I've had a chance to interview, you know, Colin Morikawa's mental coach and some amazing coaches on the podcast. The author is Zen Golf. And, you know, I think the biggest thing is first understanding the role of the mental game and what is it? Well, the role of the mental game is to figure out how we can get our peak performance. And by that, we mean, you know, if we're stressed out, if we're frantic, we're angry, we're anxious, we're all these negative emotions, we have high brain waves. And we have high brain waves, we are not going to be able to get in the zone. We're not going to be able to play our best golf. And that's why when you think about your best rounds or even some of those holes, or even maybe at 3 holes, 6 holes, 9 holes, where you're like, man, golf felt easy. I just finally was able to let go. I played my game. Like, I knew it was going in the fairway. I knew it was going on the green. I knew I was making putts. Like, that is the goal of the mental game, is to get in that state more often. It's hard to do, though, because we have to, one, learn this stuff, and then, two, actually remember to apply it during the round. Plus, we also have to have the skills. So, I mean, I talk about the mental game a lot, but if you shoot 120 right now, you can have the best mental game in the world and you're not going to shoot in the 70s, right? So we have to understand that we have to have the skills for it, but there's just so many different mental hacks that we can use before, during, and after the round that can really help you out. So I think that's always the first thing I talk about with my clients is like, hey, where are we at right now? Where do we want to get to? And I think that's always key. Like, yes, goals are so important, but also not just like, I want to be a scratch golfer. It's like, what does that look like? Like, how are you conducting yourself? Like, how do you warm up? How do you carry yourself after a bad shot? What do you do in between shots? What are you thinking about the night before a round? What are you thinking about during the round? What are you thinking about after a bad round? How do you talk to yourself? Like, there's so many different things we like to think about. So yes, I love having process goals. I love having outcome goals for your score, you know, getting a lesson once a month, doing all these things. Like, that's all key. And the same thing with the mental game, right? Like, so you can, you know, if you've never meditated before, you want to have the best mental game and you think, oh, I'm going to meditate, you know, 5 minutes every day and it's all going to work out. Like, yeah, that could help, but there's just so many different things. And so that's why I like the mental golf type system so much, because it is specified to who you are as a person, because not all advice is created equal. Some mental golf advice might actually be hurting you and you don't even know it. And that was actually the case for me. So a really good example, you hear it in a lot of sports psychology books, hear it in a lot of advice out there, is aim small, miss small. You know, that's how you're going to hit the best targets. You go through 50 mental golf books. I bet it's in 40 of them or more, right? Like, that's a very common one. And it makes sense. Like, it does make sense in theory. But then you start to understand that everybody's mind is wired a little bit differently. And so the mental golf type system is so cool because it's based on how you are hardwired. And so for me, I'm actually part of the 25% of the population that doesn't do as well with small targets. So 75% of the population is going to be great at those aim small, miss small approach, for example. 25%, though, myself included, does not do well with it. I do better with a target zone. And so that's something where you could be like, man, I read this everywhere. It's not working for me. Why? And you're like, you know, you're mad. You feel like you're disappointing yourself. You're like, I'm doing all the things Dr. Bob or whoever told me to do. Why is this not working? And you have to think about who wrote the book and are they the same personality type as you or are they different? And you just, everybody is a little bit different. So I think that's like the biggest thing I first learned when I went through mental golf type in 2022 in my own game. And I'll never forget it because that's the easiest example is target, one of the easiest ones, but target selection. So aim small, miss small, you know, again, I read that everywhere. I had tried to do that. And then he was like, hey, you know what? Pick a target zone. Pick something that's like 25, 30 yards wide out there. And so I was playing in the Arizona Amateur that year and I had two targets all day and I hit 14 of 14 fairways. And I was like, man, this really works. Like, this is crazy. I did it the same the next day. I went 28 for 28 on a desert golf course. And I was like, this is insane. Now, I'm not saying you're never going to miss fairways or never miss greens, but I started to like realize, wow, this really works. And then another part of that aspect was like chatty. Are you an extrovert? Or are you an introvert? And so there's all these different things inside mental golf type that really teach you how to play golf based on how you're hardwired.
And so sometimes you can get immediate results like I did in that case. Other times, you know, you still have to work towards it. You might have to redevelop your routine, maybe go through a different shot process. You have to like figure it out. So yes, sometimes you can get literally instant results, which is cool. Other times you still have to work towards it. And again, just because you learn all this stuff doesn't mean you always remember to apply it. Kind of like we talked about before we hit record, you got to learn decade, but then you got to remember to have the discipline to apply the decade stuff during the round. So I'd say that's kind of like my disclaimer with the mental game is like, one, figure out what we want from it, and then also figure out how we are hardwired so that way we can get the right advice. And then when you do go reread that book or you hear somebody else talk about it, you can then look at it from a lens of, okay, that's good advice, but that probably isn't good for me. And so it's really cool when you kind of understand that. And then you have more of a specified approach versus just broad general advice.
Yeah. So this makes like so much sense to me. Go ahead, Drew.
I was just going to say, Michael, it's a really good point to talk about. Like, maybe you could touch a little bit on what the different mental golf type models are. And I don't know how many there are. Maybe there's four, maybe there's eight, right? Like, I think you said I'm a INOP or whatever it is. But can you just kind of talk about the different models? You touched on it a little bit there, but the different models and, you know, maybe people that are listening to this, right? Like, something's going to click with somebody like, oh, yeah, I should try this instead of this. What are the different models and, you know, how do they apply to, you know, some example on the golf course?
Yeah. So there's 16 different models. So it's basically, you know, if you've done like a corporate America, you've done like a personality test and they're like, hey, what is your four digits? And they're trying to like figure out because they want to manage you a certain way. They want to learn, you know, how you're hardwired to figure out, hey, are you an ENTJ or are you an INTP? So it's actually that kind of model, but then it's catered to golf advice. And so the creator, John Weir, went through like extensive testing with this using focus band technology, working with high level players to start to understand how to get the most out of your game based on how you're hardwired. So you go through, you take a free self-assessment, takes like 10 minutes, and you answer some questions, and then you start to figure out a little bit more, and then they will send you the results. And then you say, yeah, that sounds like me, or maybe not. Maybe you answer one or two more questions. But then basically it will start to give you your mental golf type. And then if you want to enroll in the program, then it like goes through the whole system. But then even if not, it gives you a lot of free advice that's really helpful. So like an easy example is extrovert versus introvert. So that's the first part of the equation. And I think the easiest example of that is Tiger versus Phil. Tiger, super introvert, head down, focused. Phil Mickelson, you know, giving the thumbs up, chatting with the crowd, being really expressive, really good body language. They are perfect for how they're playing, exactly how they are when they're hardwired well, or how they're hardwired, that's when they're playing their best. But like if Tiger tries to play like Phil or Phil tries to play like Tiger, it's just not going to go very well. I think that's why Tiger never does very well in the match, because when he was playing in those, because he's not an extroverted guy. He's not out there like entertaining. Like he's playing his best focus. Like I'll never forget before the 2019 Masters, Tony Finau said he didn't even talk to him the entire day. Like he's just locked and zoned in. But if Phil tries to play like that, it's actually going to go against his personality type and make golf a lot more difficult. So that's just one of the many examples of it. And so that's why it's just kind of fun when you start to learn what is actually going to help me get in the zone and what's actually going to get me stressed out. And so, for example, I'm an extrovert. I love talking. And if I playing bad when before I knew this stuff, I would go internal. My head would go down. I'd start to ask myself, what am I doing wrong? You suck. You know, it's like just negative stuff. I'd be in my head too much. I'd be thinking about mechanics, thinking about swing thoughts. And not surprisingly, I continued to play bad. But now, you know, I hit a bad shot. I still stay extroverted. My head stays up. I still chat with my playing partners. Like I still remember all the things that are inside that based on how I'm hardwired. So that's why I love working with players using this system, because everyone's different. So Jordan, me and you are very different in terms of our personality types. I work with some players that are literally the exact opposite of me. I work with some players that have the exact same personality type as me. So it's just cool because then I can be like, hey, were you talking with your competitors after you made that triple? Or were you, you know, focused on this? Or did you plan like this? And so it just kind of makes it fun because then it's more like a game. And it's like, hey, I went against how I'm hardwired. I know that's going to stress me out. I don't know why I did that. So yeah, you have to break some bad habits sometimes too. But yeah, it's just one of 16 personality types. It's something you're born with, basically. It's how you're hardwired. It's not changing no matter how much you work at it. So it's just figuring out what you need to do on the course. And honestly, I've found a lot of benefits from it off the course too.
Man, yeah, that's like so fascinating.
Yeah, like I can very confidently say, Andy's an extrovert. Like Andy, you're extroverted.
Yeah, so I mean, I was just going to say, like, it's just super interesting because I think about like my journey with kind of the mental game and, you know, it's almost as if like I like knew nothing about golf clubs and I just like went in to like the fitting studio And I just like started grabbing shit with like different heads. And then I just like went and played with it. And then I was like, why is my driver spinning 4,000? You know,
I think that's a perfect analogy. Like John Weir always says, it's really a mental fitting. Cause we go get club fit. You know, we get the right heads, the right shafts, the right grips. But we just kind of take all this advice in for the mental game. And don't get me wrong, a lot of mental golf advice is applicable to all people. You know, I'm convinced no matter what personality type you are, if you're saying negative things to yourself all day, that's not going to help you out, right? So there is some advice that I think is very broad and going to help all kinds of golfers. But yeah, think of this like the mental game 2.0, and it's a great way to cater it directly to you. So that way you're not just grasping at straws.
Yeah. So like I found a couple things like through my like crazy journey of like trial and error and trying everything. But like one is I just play like immensely better with a caddy. And I think it's mainly because I'm talking through like shots. So I'm actually like speaking and talking and saying, oh. And so like I kind of just developed, I jerry-rigged this little system for myself where I'm like, I basically just have 3 points, eligible points per shot. One for like making a good decision and thinking through the decision. 2 for taking a deep breath, and 3 for just thinking about the target over the ball. And I don't know where that lands me in like the archetypes, but yeah, like when I'm talking like between shots with playing partners, or I'm talking about like the shot I'm going to hit, I'm saying, hey, like, I think it's a 7-iron. Like, what do you think the wind's doing? Like, I play so much better. It's insane. Yeah. And I don't know if that's the extroverted thing or what,
that's exactly, man, it. You know, yeah. Like for a lot of my extroverted clients and myself included, I encourage you to talk out shots. That's why a lot of people do play better with caddies if they're extroverted. If they're introverted, that actually can really hurt you. So you have to be really careful. So I stress with my introverts that I'm working with, hey, make sure if you do, like I had a guy that went and played a bucket list golf course. He was really excited to play with the caddy. I said, hey, tell him before the round even starts, here's what I want you to do. You know, give me some advice on this and this if I ask for it. But like we were really specific with it. But yeah, extroverts are going to be so much better when they're talking out shots. So like when I'm going through my pre-shot routine, when I'm behind the golf ball, I will literally be talking to myself, being like, hey, this is 150 to the pin, got to land at 142. We're a little bit downwind, you know, and I will be saying all those things pretty much up until I hit the shot. Not everyone's as chatty as me, but I mean, I played with a guy who won a tournament when he was in high school. The guy started the day off with 5 birdies in a row. His kid's like 18. I'm like, man, I could be his dad. And he's out there kicking my ass, and he is just playing like his mental golf type. He's talking every shot. He really knew what got the best out of his game. And I was like, man, it was cool to watch, because even if you don't know the mental golf type system, you kind of innately know how you play your best. And it's reminding yourself to do that. So the best guys in the world, they understand how they play their best. Tiger knows he's not going to be his best if he's talking to Tony Finau about their kids and family. He's like, I'm locked in. I'm here to win the tournament that day. And he's obviously softened up a little bit in his last few years and, you know, chatty a little bit. But it just goes to show the best players in the world know that, yeah, you got to have a good swing, but you got to play golf that gets the best performance out of you in terms of the mental game.
Hey, what is like the archetype around like the visual side? I'm curious on that, because I went down the rabbit hole of trying to see like shot tracers and stuff, and I just got insanely confused. And found I'm just like so much better if I just like look at, if I pick a target, you know, and I just like feel the shot more than see it or visualize it. I'm really curious, like there, what do you find with people or where people fall in that camp?
Yeah, that's another good question. And I think that's where a lot of people get confused too, because I know I did when I was reading all these books and trying to figure this stuff out 6-7 years ago. I just remember always being like, you know, aim small, miss small, see the shot. And I'm like, man, I can't see anything. Like, I don't see that. I don't see that line. I don't see that. Like, what are you talking about? You know, I never was like, you know, going to Tony Robbins seminars and they're talking about visualizing and closing your eyes and seeing it. I'm like, I'm not seeing anything. Like, it's just not how. But when I talk it out, that's great. So yeah, it's just funny to figure out what's going to work best for you. So some guys like Jack Nicklaus talks about it, like he could see the whole thing in his mind before he hit every shot. He could see the shot taken off. He'd see it land. Amazing. That's great. Some guys like to do shot tracers. Some guys like to imagine it kind of like breaking a pane of glass, maybe 10, 15 yards ahead of you, kind of that flight window. Other people like to imagine like a field goal post out there and you can see it going through mid-flight. Some people like to just focus at the end target and say, hey, you know, I'm just imagining the ball landing in this part of the fairway or this part of the green. So there is a lot of guessing and testing. It's not really a one size fits all approach. It's figuring out what works best for you. So for me, like, I like to talk out my shots, and then I like to imagine kind of where it ends up, and thinking more like a zone. So I like to think of the shot tracer, but like widened. So I can't like do like those real small one, but I imagine it like a 20 yard wide one, like kind of like a green area. So yeah, figure out what works best for you. It's that's the thing. There's no one way to do it. Dr. Joseph Perrin of Zen Golf said that, you know, Colin Morikawa's coach said that. Like, I've had so many different guests say that. And I think that that's something I wish I would have heard 6-7 years ago, because if you try and go against that and it's just not really working, you're not giving your mind a lot of clarity. And I think that's the biggest thing that most golfers don't do before the shot, is really like focus on what we want. Like, where do we want the ball to go? Too many of us are like, don't hit it out of bounds. Don't hit it in the water. Don't hit it in the bunker. And like, that's a really negative thought. And so if we can give our mind a lot of clarity, we're going to give ourselves a lot better chance to actually hit that shot.
So, Michael, for personality traits, then, one, do you have my assessment? And two, can we kind of talk about, I think obviously Andy knows my golf game and I know Andy's golf game. It would be really interesting just really to kind of talk about it would be really interesting just to talk about, you know, my personality trait and how that, you know, goes to the golf game. Like what am I and how do I learn the most?
Yeah. So you are an INTP. So the I is introvert. The N is intuitive. The T is thinker, and the P is perceiver. So you basically have, those are like the four. So I'm an ENTJ. You're an INTP. So just to give you like a couple examples, so I got your mental golf type up here. So like, introvert should do conserve your energy, you know, process shots in your head, stay focused on your game, block out distractions, stay to your inner world. So like, I play golf with a few different introverts in tournaments this year, and they will literally go and like to the next or to the side of the tee box, and they'll just be like in their head, like looking down. They're really focused. Like, as an extrovert, that's gonna be terrible, but as an introvert, that's a great way to go in your own little world. Some people like to think of like a song or something like in their own head. They'll think of like that swing thought, and they'll just be like blocking out distractions. So they'll be more like head down, really focused, versus someone like yourself. And so like, if you're talking a lot during the round, that's actually going to kind of stress you out a little bit. So it's really important to have your pre-shot routine kind of bubble. So that way you're really staying true to that in introverted nature.
I was just saying, do you talk a lot?
Do I talk? I mean, I feel like I always just want to be somebody enjoyable to play golf with. I don't just want to lock in, but it is interesting that you say that, Michael, because there are some, like, I'll catch myself on certain holes. Like, once I'm done with the hole, I'll like walk out to the side of the green and like start going elsewhere, or like, and I'll catch myself and be like, oh shoot, maybe I should have grabbed the flag or I should have done something. But like, after I've done whatever I'm doing, I'll just start walking and like, I'll just start going. And that's, I guess that was kind of part of what I do.
And I think it's also important to remember, it's not like you're just introvert or just extrovert. Like, introverts still have extroverted natures. Extroverts, like, I'm an extrovert, but I still don't mind being by myself sometimes, you know? So it's not like it's all or nothing all day, every second of every day. And there's, you know, there's different versions of introverts and there's different versions of extroverts. There's some that are almost kind of in the middle, right? So it's like, just remember that, you're still allowed to talk to people. You're still allowed to be a fun guy to play with. But like, when it comes to your best performance, like around the shot, that's when you're going to be like, you don't need to talk out your shots. You don't need to be talking as much to your playing partners in between shots, but you're still, you know, can have fun. But once you hit your shot, then you have a little bit more freedom to kind of, you know, talk about other things and stuff. But it's not going to be like, oh, I need to be chatting all day. Or if you're Phil Mickelson, you know, giving thumbs up and engaging people in the crowd. Like, you witnessed it with Bryson. Like, he is owning his extroverted nature in that US Open. And it absolutely, he thrived on it. And it was so cool to see. And I think that he's figuring out, you know, what works best for him. Another example that was good for you, I think we talked about too, was the second one as an intuitive, and we talked about a little bit, is target selection. So, you know, the aim small, miss small approach, not going to be great for intuitives. We like to think more big picture. We like to think about more of the ball, where it's going to end up. And I think probably a really good example of it is where we spend our energy on our pre-shot routine. So, you know, a good pre-shot routine, I talk about it a lot, is about 8 seconds. And that's standing over the golf ball to actually hitting it. 8 seconds or less is the goal. So of that 8 seconds, though, as an as someone that looks at the big picture as an intuitive like yourself, like myself, you want to spend about 80% of that. So we'll say about 6 seconds looking up more at the target versus down at the golf ball. So if you're a sensor, that's actually, you know, 75% of the population. They're going to be better looking down at the golf ball, having one concrete swing thought, versus looking up at the target. That's why, like, a good example, I think, of this is Xander. Xander Schauffele
barely looks at the target. He gives it like one glance. He's looking down at the golf ball. He has his one little swing thought. Justin Thomas also does this. He's more of a sensor. They don't look up a ton. And that's, again, just kind of understanding how you're hardwired. Because if you're looking up, and you hear this a lot in sports psychology books too, target, target, target. But if you're a sensor, that's going to actually hurt you. So again, it's good for me and you as intuitives, but as sensors, that's actually going to make a lot of stress happen because you're really thinking about the target instead of your golf ball and the swing thought you might have.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting.
There's
so many aspects to this that I think, you know, Andy and I, and he's part of the podcast, I think in general, just talk about like tips for, you know, club golfers or elite amateurs. Yes. And Michael, you and I kind of had this conversation too, which is like, how can we get the most out of our games, right? Like we talk about getting fit, we talk about all this stuff. I think, like Andy said, when we first started, this is probably, and I would be very confident in saying this, the most neglected part of 99% of golfers' game. Like they don't spend any time on understanding how you learn, how you process, and how you can start to think about shots. And so to anybody out there listening, sounds like take the med, like I want to see now what Andy tests out and to see, you know, what,
do you
what
guys
he
just
can
use
get out
Myers
of this.
Briggs? So if I know I'm an ENFJ, would that be consistent okay. here? Or? Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, yeah. So for, so EN, so that's the first two is me as well. So yeah, I mean, we talked about it, you know, staying chatty, yeah. big picture with your targets, looking more at the target than down at the golf ball. So as an intuitive, like I have no swing thoughts. I have a setup thought sometimes just to make sure my feet don't get aimed right, but I have no swing thoughts.
Yeah.
So again, that's not every intuitive like that, but in general, I find that sensors typically have a emphasis more on swing thoughts and having, you know, that's why Justin Thomas, that's why Xander, they do that little half takeaway to like kind of check that.
I
and
can't
that's like
do
their
that,
checkpoint.
Bro. I tried to do that for so long.
You don't
so
have
long.
To. That's yeah. what I'm saying. You shouldn't
yeah.
do that.
Yeah,
yeah exactly.
Yeah, that's so fascinating
but that's
too. The fact
but that's
that
the problem
like,
is that we think yeah. like, oh, yeah. I want to play like Tiger. I want to play like yeah. Xander. I want to play like yeah. Jordan. Like, you're not them. So unless mm-hmm. you have the same hardwiring, you're just going against your own type. So that's why it's fun. It's like a puzzle and there is a lot of testing. It's not like this is exactly what you do and then you figure it out. Like you have to figure out what you're doing in your own game. Maybe that's stressing you out right now and it's trial and error, right, Jordan? Like we talked about it too. Like you had to start figuring this stuff out. It's not like you just get it and then like instantly it all applies. Sometimes it might, you know, one of the concepts like I talked about with the fairways, that it made a huge difference for me. But other stuff took some time to really figure out. So yeah, it is learning it. It's figuring out what works best for you and then it's remembering to actually apply it. Because that's the problem, I feel like, is that, yeah, we talk about, you know, practice and people are putting in work, buying launch monitors, doing all this stuff, which is great. But if you never work on your mental game, that's why I hear a lot of people be like, man, why isn't my range game ever on the course? It's because you don't work on your mental game. Like, if you don't have any sort of routines, if you have no emotional management system built in, if you have no process to deal with bad shots, you're going to make golf really, really hard. Because everyone can be good on the range. There's no consequences. You're hitting from perfect lies. But then all of a sudden, you know, your swing doesn't break down from that 100 yards from the range to the first tee, right? That's a mental breakdown. It's not a mechanical one.
So when you talk about like the system, I mean, I would imagine that obviously once you can kind of like understand the profile of like a player, the benefit of having a coach is like a coach can give you a ton of different tactics to deploy like within each of those lanes, right? And so you don't have to go out and like, you know, the coach say, hey, that's not a good idea for you, right? Like, that's very helpful, you know, knowing, hey, dude, like, you probably shouldn't be playing with a million technical thoughts if you're an intuitive and, you know, try this or that. Like, so how much of it is that with, like, players where it's, like, getting into the tactical of, like, hey, try this or that or, and then obviously another benefit of, like, working with someone like you is, you know, you've done this for a while. You probably know most of the tactics or have tried all of them. You know, so
always learning though.
Yeah. I'm curious about, yeah. So like, do you learn new stuff all the time or like?
Yeah. I mean, anytime you think you know it all in any area of golf, you know, you'll get humbled, I think. So yeah, I always have a learning mindset in business and fitness and golf, especially with the mental game. You know, I've had a chance to work with some pretty good players and I really always want to make sure I'm, you know, trying to learn as much as I can to give them ideas for their toolbox. Cause yeah, my goal isn't to work with someone the rest of their life, right? Like I want to give them the tools to be able to figure out, hey, I just tripled 13, but I'm playing pretty good still. Like, what can I do? It's like, you think about like, what's in the toolbox for this? How do I, you know, bounce back from that? And that is probably the most rewarding thing, because I have players from 15 to 65. And there's nothing like when you're 15 years old and you remember, hey, Mike talked about this, I should try this, and it works. And he emails me, he's like, man, I bounce back. Like, that is super rewarding for me, because I know I was an absolute head case at 15. Shit, even 10 years ago, you know? So it's like, it's so cool to see. And so that's why, yeah, I try and always learn as much as I can to give those ideas. But the whole process always starts with, well, where are we at right now? What are we doing? Because everyone comes to me at different levels. You know, some guys are, you know, shooting in the 90s and they want to get the 80s. Some people are, you know, scratch golfers and they want to get to plus five and they want to get to USGA events. Like, so everyone kind of comes at you at a different place. And some people have a lot of mental skills already. Some people have zero, but they're unbelievably talented and they have so much game that it just kind of masks their score sometimes, because they have the ball striking for it. So it's kind of figuring out where people are at and figuring out where they want to get to. And then, yeah, we kind of go through the mental golf type system, and then we'll go through all kinds of different tournament stuff, because tournaments are so different than an everyday round of golf. So I have a lot of competitive players I work with, even people that just want to play better in their club championship, or they want to play better in a two-man event with their buddy this summer. And so, you know, the tournament side of things is like a whole nother beast. And so that's why I really love it, because I've, you know, before we record, I said I've played in like 300 tournament days since 2017. So I kind of have a unique set of skills on that one as well. So I don't want to just be like some guy that's telling you, hey, do this and this. Like, I'm in the trenches still. I'm doing this stuff myself, and I'm, you know, kind of testing it out, kind of my own guinea pig at times. So it's just figuring out where people are at and where they want to get to.
What would you characterize, like, kind of using your model for like what the mental game is? Like, what would you characterize as a mental mistake?
Oh, mental mistake. Yeah, I mean, mental mistakes. So I'd say that's probably my most viral carousel post, actually, is 10 mental golf mistakes. And I'm recording the YouTube version of it tomorrow, because I think it's, people want to avoid mistakes, right? And so there's a lot of different mental golf mistakes. One of them, you know, I can just think of that I've made so many times is, you know, going up to the first tee and thinking, if I hit this bad, this is, you know, not going to be a good day. And, you know, you have these first tee jitters, and we think, you know, a mental mistake, I would say, is like, first tee jitters are a bad thing. You shouldn't feel that. Like, that's not true at all. Everybody should feel that. Like Tiger said, if you don't feel that, you shouldn't even be out there. So it's like, that's okay. If you hit a bad shot on the first tee, that's okay. But I think that one of the biggest mental mistakes I'd say most golfers make is just getting too mad over bad shots. And then they let that one bad shot turn into a bad hole or bad stretch of holes. And that is just a killer, because you can play, and I remind players this all the time, you can play great with bad shots. Like, you're just not, amateur golfers especially, we're just going to hit bad shots still. It's part of the game. I mean, I can think of a round where I shot under par and I topped one. Like, okay, like, who cares, right? Like, just keep going. But if you don't have the mental fortitude, and then you go into, why did I do that? I suck at golf, like, blah, 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 all these negative things, you're just making golf so much harder. So it's understanding that mistakes happen, that bad shots are going to happen. But I would just say, stop getting so mad over those bad shots. And that kind of stems usually from a bigger issue of just having the wrong expectations. So if you guys, you know, see my Instagram, sometimes I'll post those stats, like, pros only hit, you know, 57% of fairways. They only hit 67% of greens. Why are you getting mad when you miss a fairway or a green? And so just to give people that perspective, like, we think that we're always supposed to hit it in the fairway, always supposed to hit on the green, never three putt. And if you think that and you have those expectations, it's going to make for a long day on the course, because that's just not going to happen. I think scratch golfers even average like 50% of fairways and 50% of greens. So it's like, those are scratch golfers. That's an unbelievable player. They're still not hitting every shot perfect. So I think having the right expectations and avoiding just like massive freakouts on the course that shake you so much that you're still screwed up on the next shot or the next hole even. And again, it's easier said than done. Some of us, myself included, have had some anger issues in the past. And so you have to understand that this is not helping me play better.
Yeah. So I kind of, just one more question there. I needed, based on how much I was struggling to like get out of the outcome sinking. And so I just focused on like the process for a while, and I was tracking like three things each shot, you know, making a good decision, taking a deep breath, and thinking about the target. And, you know, I kind of characterize not doing that as like a mental mistake, because those are things that are like very controllable, right? Like, I mean, you should I can do that right now. And if I don't do it, it's usually because I'm pissed or I'm like speeding up, or I'm doing all the things you're describing, right? And what I found is like, I was making, you know, between like 15 to 20 mental mistakes around, right? Like when I tracked like the stats on it, and I was talking to actually our head pro about it. I'm like, how many like mental mistakes do you think like Tiger makes in a tournament? You know, it's like 2, 1, 0, like, like in terms of things he can control, right? And then it's like the difference between me and like the best in the world physically, obviously there's a huge difference, but the thing you can't quantify, the mental game, holy shit, the delta is huge, right? And so I'm kind of curious like your reaction on that. Like, and granted, like obviously tour guys do make mental mistakes, but man, they must do it a lot less.
Yeah, yeah. John has actually talked about that on my show, and he's caddied for one of his main guys, has been on the Korn Ferry. They went to the US Open, I think, last year at LACC. He's caddied majors. He's been on PGA events, Korn Ferry events. So he's been on the bag with him. And he talks about that a lot. Like the real big thing that they're measuring in terms of what's a mental mistake or not is their shot process. So he always says that like PGA guys are about 95% of all shots during a tournament. They are like, they have a clear target. They, you know, are 100% going through their routine. They're not rushing it. They're not taking too long. Like they're dialed. Korn Ferry guys, he says, are like 90%. And then he kind of goes down like higher handicappers or, you know, it could be 50%, or there's not really like as much of a kind of breakdown, but he's like saying that the best guys in the world, yeah, they're not perfect either, but they're damn close. And cause they know that that is so important because they have, all these guys have the game. Like they can all hit the shots. Of course, Bryson and Rory can hit it farther than everybody, but like for the most part, they're all hitting at the same distances. They all have the same skills. Sure. They might have some off weeks and stuff, but like they all have the game obviously to be there. It's just that one little mental mistake. Cause that one mental mistake cost Rory $2 million and getting into a playoff.
Yeah.
And I'm serious because if you guys watch that last putt, he didn't go through his routine at all. It blows my mind.
Really?
There's a 3'9" putt. Hard putt. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it was an easy putt. He could have left himself an easier one, but still is a pretty good shot. I don't know if the putt he missed on 16 was still in a, you know, top of mind. But even if so, he didn't go through his routine. His routine, and I rewound it 3 times because I was like, hey, maybe I just missed it. Maybe they cut to a different angle or something. He takes 1 to 2 practice strokes perpendicular behind the golf ball. Once he feels good, he wipes the putter blade. Then he walks in. He doesn't take any practice strokes next to the ball. He walks in, he looks twice, and then he goes. On that final putt, he did not go through his routine. He did not take any practice strokes behind the ball. He read the putt like he normally does all from around it, but he didn't take those. And then he starts to walk into the putt, and then he kind of kicks back like, oh, I'm not really sure on the line. And then he did walk into it, and then he missed the putt.
Oh,
and I'm
my
like,
God, man. That wow. is so fascinating.
So I watched it 3 or 4 times.
The other thing he was doing too, Michael, is he was watching what was happening behind him with Bryson, like literally watching the shots Bryson was hitting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like if he watched it all in real time, because Bryson was going through his thing, you know, like his punch out.
So he was going to results and not sticking to the process.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. He wasn't going through his process, and he was worrying too much about Bryson behind him, and it clearly all got in his head. And I think I saw a stat that was the first putt he had missed inside of like in the last 300 putts or something like that.
Yeah. Again, so that was the one on 16 was 2. Yeah. Well, one on 16 was 2 feet, 9 inches. That's crazy. So he missed that one.
He
did go through
454 for 454 this year on putts inside of 3 feet.
So he did stick to his routine on that one. I will give him that. He just missed it. Brad Faxon is his putting coach, and he even on the broadcast mentioned he's taken a little long over the putt. So time over the golf ball is huge. So that's why I encourage all my students to develop a routine, time your routine, and then actually stick to the timing in practice or when you're on the course, because you know, you can have the best routine in the world, but then all of a sudden if like the pressure kicks in, and I never knew this stuff. So I remember, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, like just thinking about some of my worst shots I'd hit in tournaments, I'd be lingering over that thing 8, 10, 15 seconds. Cause I'm like trying to think my way to a good shot, and that's just never going to work well. That's when doubts, fears, you know, all the anxiety comes in. So like he took a little longer over that putt on 16, he made a good one on 17, but then his timing didn't strike me as super long on 18, but he did not go through his routine. And like you said, Jordan, he was probably not really thinking about, he was thinking more about, hey, I got to make this. And, you know, you hear Cam Smith, you hear all the great putters, Scott Fawcett, of course, in Decade talks about it. Stop trying to make putts, go through your process and you're going to make the putts.
Wow, man, that is So fascinating that you picked up on that. That's
because I was like, no way. I mean, I watch golf a little different than most people. So I'm like sitting there eating pizza, drinking a beer. And I'm like, okay, so not that different. But in the sense of a mental coach, I'm like, what did he just do that? Like, because some of the biggest. So if you guys haven't read the book, Golf's 8-Second Secret, it's like 100 pages. I can't recommend it enough because he goes through some of the biggest major meltdowns. And I'm pretty sure he can add a chapter for Rory on that one. It sucks because I really wanted it to be a playoff with Bryson and Rory. I think that would have been awesome for the game. Bryson, don't get me wrong, epic up and down. But that book goes to show some of the biggest major meltdowns. Phil Mickelson at Wingfoot. He goes through a different guy at the British
Dustin
Open.
Johnson.
Like, he goes through six or seven examples.
Dustin Johnson at...
I don't know if he's on that one. That was
that
a U.S. Open,
putt,
yeah.
Right? Wasn't it burst speed?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was like 20 feet. Yeah, so he goes through it, and they were all routine breakdowns. I think, I can't remember the other one, but there's like so many good examples of it. And then you're like, man, that happens to the best players in the world, too. So it's a fascinating read. It's 100 pages. I couldn't recommend it enough.
I got to ask one more question, and this is a bit crude.
I could talk golf all day, guys.
One of our buddies, who's a really good player, says that like the guys that are really like the best in the world, like they kind of fall into like two camps, right? They're either like pretty dumb, like, or they're super smart. And there's not a lot of like guys in between. And the super smart ones have had to figure out a mental process and a model, right? Like through a lot of the things that you're describing. The dumb ones are just like goldfish, right? Like it's just like they don't remember. They just don't like it. What's your reaction to that?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I wish I was a goldfish. Like I'm not saying I'm smart, but like, that's just not how my mind works.
You're
I'm super
curious, right? And like,
analytical. I'm like always trying to figure stuff out. And I always have like admired Brooks Koepka, Dustin Johnson. I'm not saying they're dumb at all, but just make golf look so easy. Like they're just like going through it. They know what they need to do. Dustin Johnson specifically. Dude, I think Brooks called him a goldfish once. Yeah. Like, DJ's wild.
If you want
it's
to
insane.
Cut it, you got to cut it.
You just hit a
cut. You're trying to hit a cut.
Yeah,
hit
I
a
see
cut.
You fade. I hit a fade. Like, I wish I could play golf like that. But that's knowing your style. If Tiger tries to play like that, I guarantee it's not going to go very well. So DJ figured it out, and kudos to him, man.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Michael, I know we're at the end of our time. This was honestly one of my favorite conversations. You're clearly just a golf sicko and golf nut, like both Andy and I. And we're hoping to come down Arizona, you know, sometime in your backyard. It would be awesome to go out and play, meet you in person.
Absolutely.
And just love all the stuff that you're doing. I'm sure Andy's going to come take the assessment now. I already talked to
a
guy I'm trading with who's also going to do the same thing. So it's helped me. I'm excited.
Yeah, and if you're up in this neck of the woods, dude, we play at an unbelievable golf course. So
you guys are in Minneapolis, right?
We're at Windsong Farm, Western.
Yeah, I've had Luke obviously on the show. I've had Jordan. We've talked. I had Justin Kraft. So it seems like there's a great pocket of golfers and courses out there too. I might need a heat break.
It's some of the best in the country, man. We'll have you up anytime. So just let us know.
Awesome. I appreciate it, guys. Well, happy to talk golf anytime. So thanks again for having me.
Yeah, thanks
Michael. Appreciate it, man.
Absolutely.